Let's bring in Kevin Arnovitz, NBA writer for ESPN. And Kevin, I kind of want to get your thoughts on the Nets this year, because they showed some signs last year, and Kenny Atkinson's done a great job with them offensively. I was saying he's the best coach that nobody talks about in the NBA. And here you find them 29-28, right in the thick of a mediocre at best Eastern Conference. But I find them a really enjoyable team to watch every single night, and they kind of get it done by committee. What have you kind of made of the Nets through about 60 games this year?
I mean, yeah. I mean, they're sort of the hardest working team in basketball. There aren't a lot of headliners there, and I'm sure you guys have mentioned that. They're a pick and roll team, I think, fundamentally. I think only the Clippers, you know, do it more. But they just have now Spencer Dinwiddie's injured, but with D'Angelo Russell, and you know they have a fairly deep perimeter of guys no one has ever heard of. Trevion Graham is the starting shooting guard for one Brooklyn Nets, you know. Joe Harris is at the other wing. So, and yet these guys are extremely productive. They play a bend don't break brand of defense. They're not one of the 10 best defensive teams in the league, but it's they work really hard, and they have really good rim protection in Jared Allen, who's just kind of maybe is sort of hardworking as any big man in the league. They've got a young Latvian named Caruso who starts at Ford for them. They've got Caris LeVert now coming back. So, like, that is a tough series for somebody. And whether they end up at the 6th, the 7th, or the 8th, like, it is going to be they just work, and they're exceptionally well coached.
What do you make of this team's future? I mean, obviously Russell is going to kind of be the straw that kind of stirs the proverbial drink there. And you mentioned some of the other talent they have, but do you think this can kind of be the start of the Nets kind of climbing the echelon in the East? Or do you think this kind of maxes out as a scrappy bunch that looks good this year?
No. I mean, the organization's been going through essentially what I call an internal rebranding, not so much with the fans, but you know, and I've written about this with the Raptors, which is that, you know, a franchise wants to be, if not a free agent destination, a place that a veteran would want to play, a place where, hey, if dealt there, I would consider resigning. And if you think about it on the surface, I mean, Brooklyn, I mean, it's New York City, and there's actually a certain cachet to Brooklyn as a borough. They have the best facility in the league. They have maybe one of the two or three best arenas in the league. And they've got a coach people love playing for. It kind of comes from the Mike Budenholzer tree, and just guys just love playing for this staff. And so it's like, well, wait a minute, why not us? We're opening up space. You know, they've got a lot of money coming off the books. You know, there'll be a decision on Allen Crabbe, obviously. I mean, it's player option, but you know, you look around and say, well, why not us? Why not, you know, why wouldn't someone sign here if we can offer, frankly, a far more functional situation than the Knicks ever can? I mean, okay, it's not Madison Square Garden. It's nicer, actually. It might not have the symbolic, you know, draw, but I mean, I'd rather start a career in my prime in Brooklyn right now than with the Knicks any day of the week.
I want to get your thoughts on the Raptors. You've spent your fair share of time up here during the regular season playoffs. You know, certain Raptors fans are always looking for, you know, the nod of approval from the media south of the border. And here they are, 41-60, and they're 22-5 at home, right in the thick of things for the first seed in the Eastern Conference. Brought in Marc Gasol via the trade. They also signed Ben McLemore to a 10-day contract. Now Jeremy Lin via buyout. What do you kind of make of these pieces and how they might fit into what Nick Nurse is doing this year?
Yeah, you know, the strength of the team in the past couple of years has been depth. I mean, one of the things that really kind of blossomed last year, especially when it was up there, was just the kind of the embarrassment of riches. And, you know, obviously dealing right, they traded multiple players for one. So Lin has kind of reestablished himself down in Atlanta this year as, you know, a really functional backup pick and roll point guard who can, you know, marshal an offense. You know, will work defensively. He's not. It doesn't. I think can do what Wright could do for you. But you know, is a capable rotation guard, especially if Van Vliet going to be out for, you know, 3 weeks or so. And it's a nice pickup. I'm still, you know, liking the Pat McCaw experience. I think that was a really nice nap. You know, he's. You know, he's reasonably efficient as a guard. And so I think this is a really interesting team. You know, one of the things I've kind of noted was I can't remember the last time I really saw the Raptors, tonight notwithstanding, kind of all together and healthy, and the rotation looking like the rotation I imagine I'll see when I come up to cover the first round in April. And so I'm convinced when healthy, and that's a big caveat, the Raptors are as good as anybody. It's just that has been the caveat, and, you know, between Lowry and I support the Leonard load management plan. I think that's a really smart way to handle Kawhi. But I still kind of want to see, 500 minutes of this unit doing its thing over a month or two period. And that's just, that's been the rub is can we, if healthy, when healthy, when assembled, when fully composed, will this rotation, as deep as it is, be able to come out of the East? And I think the answer is a lot of people, yeah, but let's see.
Obviously, you can only kind of play the cards you've been dealt, and Kawhi, load management is going to be part of this, and then Lowry's a guy who has a bad back that's kept him out from time to time. How concerning is it for you that those two just haven't seen that much time on the floor together in comparison to other duos that are going to be leaned on in the playoffs?
It doesn't overly concern me, to be honest. I mean, I think it's more just, hey, as a prognosticator, I can't say it. I mean, I think these are two guys. I mean, particularly, I mean, Lowry and Leonard, when you talk about like basketball intelligence and just instinct, like, they're so good. And then you add Gasol in there, who's just that kind of player as well. Like, I mean, this is sort of the honors class here. I mean, it just in terms of the, sort of the collective basketball intelligence of this group is really incredible. Especially looking right up and down, Danny Green, Pascal Siakam. I mean, just truly kind of the brainiac, basketball. So I feel like if any team can, manage and negotiate sort of, hey, we haven't played all that many minutes together. Is it my turn, your turn? No, I think there's a sensible offensive philosophy that is adaptable, that guys understand and can perform and flourish in. And so I don't worry as much about them. It's more just I'd love to feel the way I feel when I watch Milwaukee, and that sort of five-man unit is just clicking, and the way their reserves coming in, they know their role. This isn't a criticism so much as, I would put the concern at low-level concern. It's not nil, but I do think that these guys are people who can completely adapt to, irrespective of how many minutes they played together.
Josh Goldberg, Brent Gunning, in conversation with Kevin Arnovitz, NBA writer for ESPN. And Kevin, there's been lots of chat about how robust the buyout market's been this year, and you've already seen Jeremy Lin, Wayne Ellington, Wes Matthews fly off the market to Indiana, Detroit, and Toronto, respectively. Who are some other dominoes to keep an eye on, and how many of these guys do you think can really be impact players and maybe carve out a role in a rotation for a playoff or maybe even a championship type of team?
It's funny. And you might not like this answer. It's just, I think we're so addicted to transactions right now that, like, the NBA fan has lost his mind the transactional who's going where thing is just, and I don't know if the function, if you can refresh something like Twitter every 2 seconds versus, like, when I was a kid, you'd actually wait around for SportsCenter to find out like what happened or the morning paper. But I don't mean to be a party pooper. This is it. I think maybe DeAndre Jordan gets his buyout if he wants it, although the Knicks are saying, he could be very useful around young players. Same thing with Robin Lopez. Ennis Kanter, I mean, is that guy going to be on the floor for any defensive possession that matters in this playoffs? So it's like, I don't want to be a party pooper. It's just like, oh, who cares? Like, none of these guys who are going to be bought out are going to be on the floor at a crucial moment in a very big series. And I don't mean to denigrate their talents or their contributions. They're all professionals. And Shumpert will. I mean, I think the guys who are kind of remaining, Marquise Morris will come in. And, if you run into an injury like a Van Fleet, down the stretch, there's some guards that can help you, like Jeremy Lin. But, like, will Jeremy play in front of Fred? No. I mean, Fred's going to be coming off the bench. Like, the rotation will be 8 or 9 people. It's a really helpful thing down the stretch to fortify your position in the 2 or the 1 seed. But I just don't, like, I don't get excited about the buyout market. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know who gets bought out. I mean, there's talk of, Frank Kaminsky. But if that guy hasn't flourished in Charlotte for a team that is, absolutely average on its best day, like is he the difference maker in Portland? Like, I don't know. I'm just skeptical. You know what I mean?
Even if he's not a difference maker, the one guy I would like to see get a buyout and go to a playoff team would be Robin Lopez, because he's one of the all-time characters in the NBA. It seems like great quote, great personality. It'd be kind of cool, even if he doesn't play a huge role.
The mascots everywhere.
Yes, exactly. And he'd be cool to see in a good spot.
yeah, I don't want to sound dismissive of their talents and their aspirations. Like, I Robin Lopez, he'd be a wonderful pickup. But I would also emphasize, like, I just don't know how many big men. Like, what I'm really curious to see, and it's a totally more meta conversation, is how many big men are we going to see on the floor? You know, we were coming off of playoffs where Clint Capella was not on the floor for the team he carried as a pick-and-roll man during the regular season, during, like, the crucial moments of the biggest series in franchise history. I mean, the guy was on the bench. I mean, the Golden State Warriors will roll out their death lineup. I'm very curious to see. The beautiful thing about Pascal Siakam is he can kind of function as a wing in a situation where the game gets downsized a little bit. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like, how Ibaka and Gasol are used if, indeed, it does become, like, let's say you're playing the Celtics and, like, you know, they tend to downsize. It's sort of Brad Stevens' preference, you know. Nick Nurse, and at his heart of hearts, is sort of a small ball kind of philosopher when it comes to basketball. So it is really interesting to see, like, all these big men and, like, is there going to be room on the floor? I mean, how many of them will be on the floor, you know, in the closing minutes of a really tight game? Are we going to be seeing four guards and kind of a quasi-center? I mean, I think there are a lot of situations in the West where Pascal Siakam might be your crunch time five. You know, here he's going to be the four playing next to one of two really good centers in Ibaka and Gasol.
And we've even seen that in Toronto. There were times last year that was kind of the unlocking of the offense early this year, was getting away from Ibaka and Valanciunas playing together. I do want to switch gears with you a little bit, starting off with a big man, though. You mentioned DeAndre Jordan maybe being a guy who will stay in New York. There's been thought that maybe that could be. He is close with a number of players in the league. He's friends with them. There's the the ongoing talk of recruiting at all point in time. Do you think the league is at, you know, we talk about the idea of transactions and everyone falls in love with them. Do you think the league is at kind of a tipping point where the off-court stuff is becoming what's driving the conversation around the league as opposed to what we're seeing on the court night in and night out?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was having this conversation today, actually, with an executive. And look, the NBA has taken a lot of pride in recent years that we control the conversation. July is bigger than June, even. In fact, you know, at my company, I mean, there's often a debate of, like, whether, you know, is our coverage more important in July during when there's absolutely nothing going on, maybe other than summer league, where there are actually no meaningful games being played, or is it in June during the actual sort of gem of the calendar, which is the NBA Finals? And, you know, the fact that we even have to ask the question is sort of insane. I think it's all great for the league, but I think the league is at a point now where buzz is not an end unto itself. The whole point of having buzz was so that people would get really into it during their working hours, and so when 7 o'clock comes around, then they go run to their television and watch the games. You know, but I do think that we're at a point where the tail is wagging the dog. And what I look at is a group of superstars who are all kind of telling their kind of fan base, I'm not sure I really like you that much. Like, Kawhi, maybe I'll come back. Kyrie, maybe I'll come back. Kevin Durant, maybe probably not coming back. Anthony Davis, I don't want to be here. And we can go on and on. And, like, you know, Jimmy Butler, I don't know if I like it here. You know, like, at what point does the fan just say, screw you? Right? Like, you know, what is this really healthy for the league, where basically everything's amazing and nobody's happy? Where every star is just seemingly, unless your name is Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, or, you know, Nikola Jokic, is sort of, you know, actually the guys in OKC. I mean, give Russell Westbrook this. He can be temperamental and, you know, whatever flaws he has. Guy just kind of likes where he is and is cool with it, and there's no fanfare there, right? Like, he just does it. You want Paul George to say, I'm going to talk to him. But there is a point, I think, where the tail wags the dog, and this hype and everything else, which is basically just euphemisms for nobody's happy playing in front of the people they're playing in front of and, you know, are going to, you know, carp about it. And, like, so what does that get you as a league?
Well, it's interesting because we talk about all this stuff and, you know, players not wanting to stick with the team that drafted them, the Supermax maybe not having the desired effect. And our focus is oftentimes what's going on, like you said, in the transaction wire on social media. And it's kind of a bummer because it takes away sometimes, you know, there are purists who can still appreciate what goes on in the court. But I look at a team like the Sacramento Kings, who play with a ton of joy, a lot of pace, very exciting. They add Harrison Barnes. They're looking to make the playoffs for the first time in like a dozen years. And it just doesn't have maybe the desired, you know, meaning or feel for the casual fan because, who cares about the Sacramento Kings? And for me, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, look, I watch like every Kings game now. They've sort of adopted them in the Bucks just as, and by the way, not a coincidence, two places where nobody's really kvetching about, you know, who's saying where, right? Like you just watch them and it's fun. You know, there's no jockeying or, hey, our off season's bigger than our season, which, you know, so, I mean, I think fundamentally agree on this. And look, it's great for you. It's great for me. I mean, it gives us stuff to talk about. We were paid to basically kill people's time, you know, thinking about the NBA and pontificating about it. I mean, hell, I'm sure you guys fill hours all the time talking about where this one might go. But I'm with you. It's kind of disappointing because I think the product is really good. The court's really opened up. I mean, y'all have seen it in Toronto. I mean, this is just a more fun brand of basketball, unless you have to watch James Harden every night, in which case it's sort of spectacular, but aesthetically ugly.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan, but that's where I think the league at some point, and there are going to be conversations. There are going to be conversations at the Board of Governors meetings. It's not just Laker envy and Laker hate. I think there's a notion that, this is getting away from us. And it's not players claiming power they should rightfully have. And I'm all for players calling, you know, controlling their destiny. It's something that I think was corrected in 2010, rightly so. But I think we've gone to a point where this intrigue, it's like everything else in the culture. There was this great moment during the American election last year where they finally had the first night of election returns, and David Axelrod, who was a Barack Obama, kind of his horse whisperer, his main consultant, was on the panel, and he started talking about the actual results. And he's like, enough of these results. Let's go back to talking about the polls. That's more fun, right? Like even though we actually have sort of the manifestation of all this, like, player movement that we want, oh, let's just talk about the player movement. Forget the fact that these guys are doing amazing things. I mean, I just saw, like, in the background, three amazing minutes of Raptors basketball that just happened right now. That's kind of where we're in the head of this weird postmodern novel where it's just like, we're not even watching the thing. We're watching the thing, watching the thing.
Yeah,
and that's just weird.
I agree. It's very fascinating. We will let you go. I want to get you out on this quick one. The East, there's kind of four teams that have separated themselves. Where do the Raptors fit in that mix for you?
Behind Milwaukee, that right now is just like, that Milwaukee's got some special sauce going. And hey, it could change at any moment. Guy could go down. But I just really love where they are. I mean, it reminds me a little bit, and I know it's loaded, 14-15 Warriors, but there's just something kind of almost just the beautiful choreography is seamless about it. It's just like there's no effort to just producing what they want to produce. They just kind of blossoms on the floor. But I think the Raptors are right there. I mean, I think, you know, again, I want to see this team kind of congeal, and when it does, I think it's going to be pretty special.
Kevin, really appreciate the time. Enjoyed the chat tonight and hope to do it again soon.
We'll talk soon.